COVID-19 patients need your help.
If you've fully recovered from COVID-19
or unknowingly been exposed to it,
you may have the antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients recover.
Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies.
Visit Vitalant.org today to schedule an appointment to donate blood.
That's Vitalant.org. Help save lives and schedule your appointment at Vitalant.org.
You could help save lives.
A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online, so any small business could be a driving force to create change or build an empire. We know old ideas aren't cutting it anymore, so we're calling for a new generation of thinking, your way of thinking. So whatever you have in mind that will help make a different future, find everything you need to get started at GoDaddy.com. Because the future isn't decided yet. It's up to us to make it happen. Start different at GoDaddy.com.
This is an ode to the glass noodle. You may be glass only in name, but our love for you is crystal clear in every Bibigo Korean dumpling. Your tantalizing texture tickles the taste buds, and while you are see-through, the world can't help but see you. The glass noodle, one of many obsessively crafted ingredients in every plump and juicy Korean dumpling from Bibigo. Go handcrafted. Go Bibigo. Authentic Korean dumplings now in the freezer aisle.
This is Podco Media Networks.
It's the Innovation Podcast with Mark Reed Edwards and Garnett Harriman. Let's start the show.
Hi, it's Mark. We're back with Tyler Lorenzen, former college and pro football player, and now CEO and president of Purist Proteins, to continue our chat about pea protein and the future of food. Purist is an interesting company that just drew an additional $75 million investment from Cargill to double its pea protein production. In this part of our discussion, Tyler tells us about the peas Purist grows and how Purist's regenerative approach to agriculture helps the environment. Plus, we take a glimpse into the future of food. Here we go.
The protein content of a pea, first of all, the pea is that we use are yellow field peas. So think of split pea soup or something like that.
Yep.
So peas typically have around 20% protein. They can have more, they could have less, but we're trying to make a 80% plus protein product in the end. And when I say product, the product that we sell is actually a powder. So You're a New England guy. So, you know, Tom Brady's TB12 pea protein shake comes in a bag and is a powder. So it started off as a pea. And so you take that pea that has 20% protein, 50% starch, 14 to 15% fiber. And really we turn it into a milled flour, and that flour is then added into water. And we use water and mechanical separation to separate the protein as protein, the starch as starch, and the fiber is fiber. And in that process, you know, I don't know if everyone is in line with you that they like the taste of peas. And so, or like eating them. So what we try to do is take that experience and transition it into a cleaner tasting ingredient. And cleaner tasting meaning tastes like nothing. And so allowing these food scientists to use their technologies to really create foods that don't need as much sweetener or doesn't need as much masking agents, just cleaner, fewer ingredients that are making the foods that we're trying to eat. And ultimately, we add the water, we take that water out, we recover as much as we can, and then we sell a powder. The powder is used to construct the food. So you look at protein shakes as a really obvious transition from, hey, it's a pea, we turn it into a powder, we sell the powder to a company, or maybe we formulate that whole shake for them. There's a number of ways that we'll do it. And then that powder is sold to end eater. Very simple. But then there's other companies like the plant-based meat sector that will take the powder and then they turn it into something else. We actually have a product that's called texturized pea protein, which all it is we're taking pea protein and we're extruding it, which puts steam and pressure on the protein and gives it a meaty-like structure. And then that structure gives you the taste and bite that you're used to, or eating meat where it's fibrous, but also there's protein and there's some fat. And then that delivers the ultimate plant-based meat experience. What companies like Beyond and others are getting really good at is taking that experience and really mimicking how the product cooks up, how it tastes when you squeeze it, what comes out, all of this stuff that's next level that I don't think it was ever considered back at the beginning. They were literally looking for products that just weren't meat. And now they're targeting flexitarians that you know what? Maybe they'll eat meat the majority of the time, but on occasions they want to eat a plant-based meat dinner and they really want it to taste like the real thing. And that's what I think iPhone 1 of, you know, iPhone 10, that's where we're at today. And what I'm excited about is seeing the creation going from the next upgrades of the plant-based food movement.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an engineering challenge in a way. It's not just putting food together. It's putting molecules together, right?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things people talk about a lot is processed food. And the spin on it is how it's, you know, super negative. I think there's a balance, right? What's processed food? Like meat's processed. You know, most food that you eat is actually processed in some factor or another because they have to make it safe to eat. And the whole concept of how do we eat less processed food is an interesting conversation, but what's probably more important is what are those foods made up of?
Sure.
What is the macro nutrition of that food? And then comparing one version to the other, how does that work within your lifestyle and work for you as a person? And then that diet could be very beneficial. And I think it's just exciting to see the debate because the debate drives people talking about it. Conversation drives new ideas and change behavior. And it's a really exciting time to be in our industry.
Yeah, that's for sure. So one thing about purists and reading some of the material preparing for this interview that was interesting, I thought, was compared to the production of meat, the byproducts in the production of meat harm the environment. It's kind of a modern day catastrophe. But pea protein that you produce, the byproduct of that actually helps soil heal and regenerate itself. And that's something really interesting, that producing food can actually help the environment, not harm it. I'm probably simplifying that, but how does that kind of work?
I think you nailed the definition of regenerative agriculture. You know, how do you help? How do you give back more than you take? And that's really, it all starts in the soil. How can we build a system that makes more sense for farmers? Because ultimately, sustainability is great. Agreed. Regenerative agriculture is great. Agreed. But what's in it for the farmer? And it's no different than when, you know, we all know smoking is bad for you.
Yeah.
Gives you cancer. But tons of people still smoke. And why is that? Well, it's a long-term problem. It's not a short-term problem. And the same thing happens with soil health and regenerative agriculture and sustainable farming. It's not necessarily an instant impact of benefit day one. It's maybe longer term. And what we've been able to do, and where I think Purus is different in how we're help enabling the market, is give farmers the tools to grow more crops, so have more crop diversity, because that builds soil health. Adding nitrogen into the soil by literally grabbing it from the sky and converting it to usable fertilizer for a pea, as well as the next plant. So to give you a basic story that maybe to simplify this a bit, every time you grow peas, there's about 70 pounds of nitrogen on a per acre basis put into the soil and left behind.
Yeah.
So if you grow wheat or pumpkins or something like that, they require a level of nitrogen that have to either be added on, or if you grow a certain crop rotation, you can have that nitrogen already in the soil. And one of the biggest challenges is you look at corn farmers, the amount of nitrogen for a corn to yield at the levels that they yield today, you have to add about a pound of nitrogen per bushel. So the corn yields around 200 bushels an acre, something like that, give or take. So 200 pounds of nitrogen per acre. And there's, you know, 90 million acres of corn. So you're talking a ton of nitrogen into the soil. And what's happening all across the United States, and I'll get a specific example, is the Gulf of Mexico, the Mississippi Delta area, down at the basin of the Mississippi, it's nitrogen runoff from agricultural fields going into the streams are winding up having chemical imbalances in the oceans, in the waters, that then create these algae blooms. and the algae blooms kill all the fish and destroy the economies down in these waterways. And it's happening in Tulsa. It's happening. And even in New York, there's, if you look it up, it's kind of mind blowing. And what's happening, it's this overuse of chemical nitrogen. So when you think about regenerative agriculture or what are we doing, simply taking the middleman out of growing crops to feed animals and versus growing crops to feed people, and specifically growing crops that add nitrogen don't need nitrogen. So it's a more efficient balance for the soil and it gives more than it takes. And I think there's a lot of arguments on, you know, what's the right combination, what's the right mix going forward. I think Pures is, it's overwhelmingly on one side today, and that's through we grow crops to feed animals. Those animals digest those proteins into muscle tissue or eggs or milk, and we drink that product, or we eat that product, or we cook that product and eat it. And what we're trying to do is say, all right, that's fine. How can we create more people to choose a different route that skips that step and focuses on delivering plant-based choices that allow people to have a positive impact and create more balance? And that's what sustainable agriculture, regenerative agriculture is to me. It's really balance.
It cuts out the middleman, as it were.
Yep, for sure. And it's got to taste good or that'll never work.
Do you envision a day when pea protein and the kinds of products it enables will be as common on the shelves as meat is today?
If you've recovered from COVID-19 or unknowingly been exposed to it, you may have antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients. Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies. Visit Vitalant.org today.
Or, you know, meat-based products.
This is probably my favorite conversation because you have to forecast yourself into the future and you literally put yourself into the grocery store if they still exist, or maybe your refrigerator sitting on your doorstep of your house, who knows, with Amazon these days. But I think there'll always be a combination of both. I do think that, you know, what is meat in the end? There's a lot of debate on, you know, using the word meat, but there's coconut meat, there's meat of a fruit, there's all sorts of types of meat. And so when you think about it, is could plant-based alternatives be more economically viable, more sustainable, and taste just as good or better? And if they can, I think the economics will win. Now, that has to get very, very big for that to happen. But I do think companies are focused on figuring out a way to make that happen. You look at non-dairy milk, for example.
Right.
And 20 years ago, someone say, hey, do you ever think soy milk or non-dairy milks will ever be as big as dairy milk? Well, they're not quite as big. But when you talk about 50% of millennials don't drink liquid milk, I mean, it's crazy. And it's growing still at a, you know, fast click at $1.8 billion type of business. 13% of the fluid milk category is non-dairy.
Yeah.
You make that into meat, you know, that's a $10 billion industry. And it's at less than $1 billion today. So I think it's definitely possible, but it has to be way bigger than that for it to shift the delta towards the plant-based side. And it has to be incredibly huge, which is exciting. And I've tried to forecast myself in the grocery store and see that day, but it's starting to happen.
Yeah. And it's something that, you know, could take 20, 30 years to accomplish.
Absolutely. I mean, if there was think food service and you ordered, you know, something with ground beef and, you know, there's ground beef is pretty cheap and there, the plant-based version is more affordable. And then ultimately, what's ground beef? It's something that tastes like that. It gives you the nutritional experience and it's in your chili. Would a consumer care?
Right.
And if it, you know, if they're still getting the full value, I'm not sure. I think that is a really interesting argument long-term for this whole sector. And, you know, which type of food is it? Who knows? But there's certainly people out there pressing the gas, which is the only way to create the innovation, to create the change and to see if it's possible.
And it's really, you know, as we said earlier, it's really not that long ago that Beyond Meat, Impossible Burger were kind of impossible, right? And what do you think we might see in the years ahead in the food business that isn't possible today? You kind of mentioned earlier we're at iPhone 1 and, you know, the goal is to get to the iPhone 10. But, you know, what's the iPhone 5 going to look like in the food world?
Yeah, I'm laughing because, you know, think about your Nokia phone. Maybe that's where we're at, you know, and that getting to the point where there's new features, new benefits and continuous improvement. I really believe we're just scratching the surface of what's possible with some of the intellectual property that we're creating at Purus and trying to enable the ingredients and the food technology that can really create an efficient system that fosters other unique products. Look at all the big categories. And even a lot of it starts with taste for me. So some near-term things that could happen that I think that will happen is, you know, plant-based cheese, there's not a ton of players, and the quality is, let's face it, doesn't taste just like cheese.
Yeah,
it's not the same thing. It's got a long ways to go, but I know there's a lot of effort going in that space to figure it out, and I'll bet on a bunch of smart humans to figure it out. And also on the yogurt side, you know, there's how many people have almond milk in their cart and then, you know, Greek yogurt in their cart, so they're not buying almond milk because they're allergic to cow's milk, because clearly they're drinking, you know, Greek yogurt, dairy yogurt, and sure, that quality difference between the plant-based version and the dairy version is very big now. But both sectors, cheese and plant-based yogurt, are growing at 40%.
Yeah,
you know, they're rapidly growing. So how do we create the next innovation in those spaces where not only is it the taste, but also the nutrition, and also the, you know, the probiotics, the whole picture. And then on the cheese, to me, it's such a unique experience. And that is going to be the challenge for the plant-based sector. But I think those are some really short-term things that will happen. And there'll be, I think accessibility will probably be the most interesting thing of what every restaurant you go into, every place around the country, you'll be able to get these kind of foods to your refrigerator somehow, some way. And that is, that's a big shift. We have manufacturing facilities across the Midwest and in Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, Illinois. And some of our locations, it's very difficult to get the products that our customers sell. And that is something I see that will change. And there's a lot of pressure on the conventional agricultural market on, and, you know, being a commodity, ups and downs, and that value creation for the whole picture. So it's not a matter of if it'll change. There'll be innovation. There has to be, because we have to find ways to keep farmers super successful and growing what's possible here in the United States and abroad.
Well, I could go on and on with you, Tyler. This has been a great discussion. I really appreciate you sharing the story and telling us about Purus. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I could probably talk about it all day too.
Really enjoyed learning about Purus and the entire sector. Coming up in the weeks ahead, we have Ryan Merkley of Creative Commons, Jonathan Webb of AppHarvest, Lauren Conaway of Innovator KC, and Tommy Williams of Tommy's Superfoods. Lots more on the way too. But next time, it's Ryan Merkley. See you then.
Thanks for joining Garnett and Mark on the Innovation Podcast. Visit theinnovationpodcast.co to subscribe and listen to other episodes.